toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. Most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Simon Morato.
This is an official RTRFM podcast where we share our weekly edition of Movie Chat, as heard on Breakfast with Taylor every Friday morning, 7:30 a.m. on RTRFM 92.1. And we cover new cinema releases, we cover streaming releases, we even cover movies that are in cinemas for 1 week and then go to the streaming platforms in this weird and wacky world that we live in where, yeah, the I know, it's all narrowing down. What is cinema anymore, Simon?
Why don't streaming films go to the cinemas after a few months? why didn't Hustle get a theatrical engagement after a few weeks?
I think that's a good idea, because sometimes I think it's just a shame, and it depends only if the movie is big enough or if it's part of the conversation for Oscars, that a movie can just premiere on a streaming platform and then kind of be forgotten about and get lost in the shuffle. I really wanted to catch up with the Florence Pugh film The Wonder, which is on Netflix. But that got a limited release here in WA. But we're just in a different time, and everyone's figuring it out. But one film that is in cinemas that we discuss is The Menu, a film starring Ralph Fiennes and Anya Taylor-Joy, which is a kind of dark satire that focuses on a group of wealthy people who travel to a secluded island for a destination restaurant, and the evening takes a turn for the worst. And similarly, we have another film where things take a turn for the worst, Simon.
That's right. We kick off this week's episode with a film that, as of recording, is currently in cinemas for 1 week before heading to Netflix in the end of December, and that is Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery, the latest installment of Rian Johnson's whodunit franchise, starring Daniel Craig as Benoit Blanc, once again left to figure out which of a group of very annoying wealthy people might be behind a murder. So let's take a quick listen to the trailer before getting to the review with Taylor Serrano.
Hello! Oh my God!
Crew, we've arrived! Disruptors have assembled!
Welcome, gang. We got a great weekend.
Who's that?
Benoit Blanc, the detective?
Mr. Blanc, I cannot overstate my gratitude
to be here. When's the murder mystery start?
7:30 on your Friday morning. It is time to check in with the squad. As always for Movie Squad, Tristan, good morning.
Good morning.
Simon, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing very well. I discovered something this week, folks, and maybe you can weigh in on this. Black Friday today, right? They do Black Friday sales for concert tickets now, which I didn't know was a thing. Is this something you were aware of?
No.
Do you think they'll ever do it for movies?
Surely
you can't mark a movie down any, it's pretty reasonable.
Well, are you talking about movie tickets?
Yeah.
Well, there's, TA Tuesdays, if you're familiar with those.
No, go on.
Tight.
Oh,
yeah. Tuesday, cheap tickets on a Tuesday night. That used to be the thing. Some cinemas will do a Wednesday night, depending on...
It's like trade assistant Tuesday.
Teacher's assistant, yeah. So that's a thing that exists. Certainly, I always keep an eye out on Black Friday or sales days for the 30% off all DVDs, Blu-rays, and 4K DVDs, etc. But there's always, Taylor, there's always a margin on any product out there in the commercial sphere. But Tristan and I, we're here for the art.
No,
we're not here for the commerce. We're here for the art.
Thank you for clearing that up for me. Just a reminder, if it is Black Friday, let me know if you're taking advantage of a sale. I'm keen to hear from you folks today. We're going to turn our attention now to film. And Simon, we're going to start with something that I've been hotly anticipating. I'm sure other people have been as well.
Absolutely. We're kicking off with Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery. This is the sequel to 2019's surprise hit, Oscar-nominated hit, Knives Out, starring Daniel Craig as the Southern Fried Gentleman Detective Benoit Blanc. Taylor, you're excited for this sequel. why are you so excited for it?
Because I really loved Knives Out. I recommended it to a bunch of people. I've watched it a couple of times now, and I just really like Daniel Craig as Benoit Blanc. I love a good ensemble cast, and I love a good whodunit as well. It just ticks all of the boxes for me.
Nice one. Tristan, we reviewed it 3 years ago now. Refresh my memory. What were your feelings about it? Have you rewatched it since?
Yes. No, I've watched it a few times, and it's definitely one to return to because it is, enjoyable and entertaining. I am a fan of it. And Rian Johnson, I like him a lot as well. He made the divisive Last Jedi, but also Looper and Brick going all the way back, and managed to revive this genre of the kind of the murder mystery, the Agatha Christie-esque murder mystery, which was kind of popular, I think, back in the day, and had kind of reformatted to a television serial mystery dramas. But it feels like with Knives Out, we've seen the kind of like the consequences of its success with all these sort of variations, and See How They Run, which came out this year, and other kind of films, you know, following in its wake as well.
Absolutely. And but funnily enough, those that are now trying to echo or emulate the success of Knives Out have kind of forgotten what made Knives Out so special and interesting and good. Besides the fact that it was a great ensemble, Daniel Craig was so fun and hammy in that role. But I think it's okay to say now that what was unique about Knives Out, and I'm sure we danced around this at the time of the review, was that we find out who believes they accidentally committed the murder pretty early in that film, and we actually follow that character as Benoit Blanc sort of closes in. There are still many more surprises that unfold throughout Knives Out, and I very much liked it in cinemas. I watched it again probably last year, I think, and I liked it even more on the second go around because I think I just appreciated all those layers that were being unpeeled. And I think that is absolutely going to be the case for Glass Onion as well. Now, I'm not going to go deep into the details on this film. I definitely don't want to spoil it for either of you or anyone else out there. But yeah, we can certainly set up the premise of this film, which involves a sort of eccentric billionaire genius bro tech investor played by Edward Norton. His name is Miles Braun, and he is very, very, very heavily inspired by a certain owner of Twitter, without giving away too many identifying details. But he sends out a bunch of puzzle boxes to his best friends in the world, his cultural disruptors, he calls them disruptors, people who are leaders in their own fields, even if their fields are fairly dubious. And these puzzle boxes include an invite to his Greek island, where they're going to stay at his complex, the Glass Onion, which is looks as it sounds, and they're going to solve his murder. He's established basically a murder mystery party for his best and closest friends, who are played by Catherine Hahn, the great Catherine Hahn, Leslie Odom Jr. from Hamilton, Dave Bautista, who's really funny here as a very popular men's rights activist on Twitch, and Kate Hudson as an airy sort of fashion model and fashion maven who keeps getting cancelled for tweeting out racist things. But what's interesting is that Miles Braun has also invited a character played by Janelle Monáe, who was his recently spurned business partner. And they've all just gone through this terrible sort of trial that basically kicked her out of the benefits of their business. And also, Benoit Blanc has found himself invited to the island. But who invited him remains a little bit of a mystery. And effectively, he cons onto the fact that he's got to solve a murder that hasn't happened yet, because it seems like Miles Braun is being targeted by one of his guests. So, again, an interesting wrinkle here that Rian Johnson, the writer-director, has created to sort of upend the idea of a whodunit, sort of a pre-whodunit. But what I love about Glass Onion, and again, I'm not going to get into the details, but halfway through you realize you've been watching a completely different movie without realizing it, and everything you thought you understood is sort of turned on its head, and the movie completely changes and evolves, much like the puzzle box that opens at the start of the film, into something completely different. And that's where the delight of Glass Onion really comes in. The other delight is that you're hanging out with a great ensemble of actors, like with Knives Out, and there were so many standouts in that cast, but the actors here are really fun. Again, I can't even say who are the standouts, because I think that would enter into spoiler territory. But certainly Edward Norton is a lot of fun here. And Daniel Craig, because of that first film, you know, as we discussed, where we're not really looking at the film from his perspective. We're sort of following the character who's concerned that Benoit Blanc's going to catch them. It was really unique this time around to kind of be in with Benoit from the get-go, see a bit of his home life, see the cogs turning a bit more intimately. And he is really silly and goofy in this role, while he finds a nice way to be the smartest guy in the room while still seeming like a bit of a, you know, someone who's behind the eight ball, but he's always two steps ahead.
It just makes him the perfect Southern gentleman, doesn't it?
The perfect Southern gentleman. I'm just a simple Southern gentleman. So, Taylor, the film is in cinemas for a week, okay? So it's in cinemas now. It's only in cinemas for a week. And then it's going to be on Netflix in a few weeks' time. Now, I was very glad I saw this in a cinema because, like a horror movie, like a comedy, there is a real delight in seeing a mystery with an audience of people. And when everyone clocks what is actually happening, as occurs halfway through the movie, and you feel like you can hear the snap in the audience and everyone goes, oh, okay. And there's a lot of fun to be had. But I'm also personally very glad that I can rewatch it in 4 weeks' time because I think this is a film that even more than Knives Out will benefit from a second viewing. Are either of you keen to have that cinema experience, or are you kind of, you know, maybe delighted that in just a few weeks' time you can watch it in your PJs at home?
Look, for both reasons, yes. I saw Knives Out originally in a cinema, and I'm very thankful that I've been able to go and revisit it a couple of times since its release a couple of years back, because you get to rewatch, you get to relive the mystery and the Easter eggs as well, just the little bits that you might have missed in the cinema. I've already got my tickets. I'm going tomorrow night.
Oh, great.
As soon as it was announced, it was a one-week in cinema thing. Yeah, I was not going to miss out on that opportunity, but we'll also definitely be revisiting probably over the summer holidays when it's on streaming. What about you, Tristan?
Yes, I mean, I haven't bought my ticket in advance, but I'd like to see it in the cinema. And it's interesting to see how the model will play out because, we've already been used to Netflix movies getting a kind of a short window, usually on account of their chances at the Oscars, I think. But with this, underlining that it's a one-week-only engagement, I think people will be kind of excited. And particularly, you know, the love for the first movie and to see the character return. One thing I have read that Rian Johnson has said is that, you know, he's happy to keep writing these mysteries as much as Daniel Craig is happy to play them. Do you think that after this movie there's still a life for this for the director and actor duo, Simon?
Absolutely. And I think what's really fun is that Glass Onion, which I will say it is 2.5 hours long. It is significantly longer than Knives Out. And there are moments where it drags a little, but I do think it is better overall. I think it really establishes the second movie, what this franchise could look like. You know, when you start to see the recurring themes and start to see the way that Benoit Blanc, even though he is more prominent in this film, they really haven't squeezed the juice out of this character because you do end up spending so much time with these other protagonists and antagonists, which I think you do more than in the Agatha Christie stories. Like Hercule Poirot is so prominent in his, you know, whodunits, whereas Benoit Blanc still recedes when required. And this is the first of two definite sequels. So as Rian Johnson has talked about in interviews, where they've said, why have you taken this to Netflix? The first film was such a big hit. And he said, well, these deals were made during COVID. No one even knew what the theatrical experience would be in 2022. And basically he sold, or Netflix paid him and his producer $450 million just to make more films. So I don't think you ever leave that money on the table. So there will absolutely be a third Knives Out film. And yeah, why not make a fourth in 5-10 years' time and just keep going back to this well, provided that it can meet this level of quality. And once again, like Knives Out, this is a, you know, I've read some reviews that have actually said it's actually more surface level than Knives Out, but I dispute that a little bit. I think there is fun satire here about a certain class of influencer, tech genius, billionaire, etc. And it is fun to see Benoit Blanc skewer these characters. Maybe that's going to be the limit to this franchise, to see, you know, who are the figures that they're going to skewer next time. Because Rian Johnson isn't really interested in having a bunch of nice, friendly people be suspected of murder. He kind of wants to needle the suspects.
All right, let us know if you saw the original Knives Out, if you were a fan, and if you're going to catch Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery in the cinema, wait for it to be released on streaming. 0405-921-921. It's Movie Squad. Back for part two in just a moment.
Is that going to fit everyone?
Yeah, easily. 12 customers total.
How do they turn a profit?
$12.50 a head, that's how.
What, are we eating a Rolex?
It's one of his classics.
You have to try the mouthfeel of the mignonette.
Please don't say mouthfeel.
Tonight will be madness.
Welcome. We'll endeavor to make your evening as pleasant as possible.
Welcome to Hawthorne.
Here we are family.
Yes, sir!
We harvest, we ferment, we gel. We gel. We gel.
It's Movie Squad, and right now, Tristan, we're going to turn our attention to a different sort of, not whodunit, but it's a bit of a murder mystery. Tell me about The Menu.
The Menu. Yeah, I think this film would be another one that is kind of a result of the success of Knives Out, even though there are other influences that I'll talk about in a moment. But it definitely takes the... It seems parallel to something like A Glass Onion, because this is another movie about people, wealthy people who are targets of the film's satire, going to a secluded island, and in the wake, you know, things take a turn. But it's not quite a murder mystery. It's a little bit something else. But this is something that focuses on, yeah, it's a destination restaurant for the ultra wealthy. So part of its target is looking at fine dining and these trends for restaurant experiences, gastronomy and all that kind of thing. I mean, Simon, how do you, you know, respond to fine dining? Are you a fan? Are you one who's eager to see it knocked off its perch?
How do I feel about fine dining? I used to really enjoy Heston Blumenthal's show, so the molecular gastronomy sort of dinner parties he would put on. I used to find that quite fun. But Taylor knows, and you probably do as well, Tristan, that I'm a Great British Bake Off fan. You know, I like home cooking. I'm not really that interested in silver service, you know.
Yeah. How about you, Taylor?
Look, there's a time and a place for it, and I don't think that everybody is into it. It's fine. I've consumed little bits of it. I'm more into, like Simon said, the more homely cooking or the story behind the cooking.
Yeah, and then also, you know, part of that is foodie culture and the fact that everyone kind of has a love of food, or, you know, the kind of trend in TikTok recipes and so forth, so that the amateurs become celebrities and professionals. But here we're focused on a restaurant called Hawthorne, which is on this island, and it's an exclusive restaurant. To book a table and be ferried over to the island means that you're ultra wealthy, and it's run by celebrity chef Julian Slowick, played by Ralph Fiennes, and his kitchen crew, who are organized kind of like a cross between a military unit and a cult, in that they live on the island, they prepare all the ingredients, and they respond to his every kind of demands in the kitchen. The film focuses on a young couple who are our focal point. Tyler, Nicholas Holt, who's a passionate foodie, who seems to be a wealthy up-and-comer in some business, and his partner, Margot Mills, Anya Taylor-Joy, who... We're fans of Anya Taylor-Joy here, are we?
Yeah, I mean, I still haven't seen The Queen's Gambit, but yes, I'm into her, what she does.
Yet The Witch... Still right up there. And what was the other film she did? She did a film called Thoroughbreds.
Oh,
that
yes.
That was not very good, but she was very good in it.
Yeah, and Last Night in Soho from the other year. I mean, she's a rising star, and she's kind of our entry point pretty much in this film. But she's also a last-minute replacement, which causes a bit of concern for some of the staff members, because everything has been meticulously planned, including the guest list, which includes a faded movie star, played by John Leguizamo, a restaurant critic, and her editor, played by Janet McTeer and Paul Adelston, and three tech bros, played by Rob Yang, Mark St. Cyr, and Arturo Castro, and a wealthy older couple, played by Reed Burney and Judith Light. So there are some familiar faces there in the cast, but they're all kind of there and enjoying these very conceptual courses that are brought out, and the film kind of shows them in glorious detail with the kind of the ingredients listed there as kind of like chapter headings. They're settling in for the dining experience and the thunderous clap of the chef, but then things take a turn for the worst. And I won't, similar to Glass Onion, The Knives Out Mystery, I won't get into spoilers because I think that part of the experience is kind of going along with these characters, and they're there for one thing, and then it turns into a completely different kettle of fish, and one that involves blood and gross things, and takes a kind of a trip into the subgenre of horror and thriller. So, yeah, this film, The Menu, it's out in cinemas this week. I was very open to the idea, and, you know, the cast looked good, Ralph Fiennes and Anya Taylor-Joy. But in the first 5 minutes, there was something that kind of put a groan in my heart, and I think that was the Anya Taylor-Joy character. She's kind of the audience surrogate, and she's kind of conceptualized with a leather jacket. She smokes, she's got dyed red hair, and she rolls her eyes at all this kind of foodie and high culture.
You're describing all three of us.
Yes. Yeah. But to me, I was just kind of like, it just felt like an obvious point of entry. And then that sort of spoke to the movie itself in that there was no real surprises in the movie. And it sort of takes this approach. And I'm all for the idea of the movie, the kind of the horror aspect and the kind of targets of the ultra wealthy and these snobs and so forth. But it really fell flat to me. I did not enjoy this movie at all. And I might be alone there. There's a few dissenting voices. I think people overall have really enjoyed The Menu. There were a few walkouts, I think, from the cinema when it started to get quite serious or quite dark. But I think there are other, you know, reviews and opinions that have been very favorable to this movie. I just think there was something about it that was quite lacking. It wasn't funny enough to be a satire, and it wasn't really like brutal enough to be a horror movie. The comparison is that it feels like a sort of a safer version of something like Midsommar, to the point where the score by Colin Stetson, who did not do the score to Midsommar, he did the score to Hereditary, but the moments at the end of this film sound so much like the score to Midsommar. And there was just something about it that felt very unsatisfying and unfulfilling as a meal. So, yeah, all the performances are quite good. Nicholas Hoult, especially, I think, does really well in his character. But there was just something about this film, to me personally, that just felt like an extended SNL sketch. And it just lacked the bite of what it needed to do as a film. But I feel like I might be just, this is my personal reaction. I know, Simon, you've not seen this film. You've seen the advertising. This is also directed by Mark Myland, who is kind of the kind of the promo around it is that he is one of the key directors on Succession, and yes. It's also produced by Will Ferrell and Adam McKay, who produces on Succession. So that gets thrown about a lot. But yeah, did you have any interest in The Menu when seeing this?
Well, part of the issue with it, as you kind of allude to, is that I'm not surprised to hear you say it's a bit of a feathered fish, because the marketing, the promo, the poster has really fallen flat for me. Like, it doesn't really convey the tone of the film. Again, I haven't seen it. But what I mean by that is I'm not really sure what The Menu is meant to be.
Yeah.
And in the vision in my head, it was like, oh, okay, this feels like it's going to be the cook, the thief, his wife and her lover on like a six. You know what I mean? Like a real dialed down version of that. And I'm kind of not interested in that. Like, I want to see it go whole hog or do something different. And again, the cast is really appealing. Nicholas Hoult, I want to shout out. I think he is so great in The Great, the TV show, where he plays the king there. But I kind of get what you're saying in terms of this maybe having a bit of an identity crisis, because I'm kind of getting that feeling as a observer from the outside.
Do you two realize how many like food related puns you have made today?
Mine are all accidental. I can't speak for Tristan, but I am internally rolling my eyes like Anya Taylor-Joy as they pour out.
Yes. And that's, I mean, I'm interested to hear what you would think, Taylor, but that comparison, Simon, to The Cook, The Thief, The Wife and His Lover, Peter Greenaway film from the 80s, if you've ever seen it, you can never forget it because it's so brutal and full on. It can't be compared to The Menu because it can't even touch. Like, that's the thing. It's got this target of these like snobbish tech bros and whatnot, but you just don't really hate them as characters, so you don't really care with what happens to them. And with Michael Gambon's character in that film, The Cook, The Thief, The Wife and His Lover, you despise his character and can't wait for his comeuppance. So yeah, what a comparison. But anyway, Taylor, like, The Menu, is there enough on the table here to maybe
Would
you put this on your plate, Taylor?
I was really excited for The Menu when I first found out about it. I was like, oh, this is really interesting, and it piqued my interest, and I didn't get to go to a screening of it, but I'm still keen to see it. Yeah. Tristan, you mentioned about there being walkouts. Is that like as a result of it got too gross or because they were bored?
It's hard to say because I can't. I wish I could do a Q&A afterwards, but like, and whether those walkouts were just people going to the bathroom, who knows? But there was a feeling, I think, to vomit, perhaps.
Yeah.
But there was a feeling that when it started to get more kind of bloody, that maybe some people, like after the first half an hour, were just not expecting that to happen, and maybe that's part of the marketing as well. But I think as well, you know, me and Simon are talking about, you know, that it's not hardcore enough in a way. I think for some people this will be the perfect level, and that's, you know, I've seen reactions where people have enjoyed it and really like what it's doing. So I'm just saying my opinion, and that's the beauty of cinema, the beauty of art. We all have different opinions and reactions.
Tristan, you have to qualify it. No, all we ever do is come here and say our opinions.
But look, The Menu is out there. I can try and convey a little bit what it's like, and hopefully people are prepared for some of the violence and the kind of the dark comedy that occurs. But yeah, I found it very lacking, but I think other people might enjoy it as well.
All right, let us know if this is one for you. 0405 921 921. That is Movie Squad this week. Tristan, thank you.
Thank you.
Simon, we'll do it again next Friday.
Absolutely.
And as always, you can play catch up at the Movie Squad podcast. It's available over at rtrfm.com.au.
So there you have it. Two reviews, two similar, I guess, you know, it's great to have an ensemble cast and some dark mysteries underfoot. But I'm really looking forward to catching up with Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery. And I hope that it will be much better than The Menu. But it was interesting when you were talking, Simon, about like what the third movie could be. And it feels like, you know, if the first one, you know, was about a family and dealt with kind of like the political mores of the time, this is looking at the tech bro culture or the kind of celebrity Instagrammers. I think maybe the third one, the movie must take a look at itself and get into Hollywood. Can we imagine that?
I think that could be quite fun. And I think, you know, do I want a version of A Knives Out Mystery where you have maybe seven celebrity actors and or filmmakers playing themselves or analogues for others? or you know what? Maybe we just do filmmakers. Like, could we get, all right, Marty, David Fincher, Jane Campion, right? What if they're the suspects, and who did they murder? Michael Bay. is that fair?
That, you know, I think it would be, you know, in the wheelhouse of Rian Johnson to kind of, you know, be very meta about the filmmaking process, and yeah, maybe just pay tribute to all the masters in that way. But
what if it's all the Star Wars directors? Just to really stick it to everyone who thought that The Last Jedi was bad when it was actually the best one. And you know, you got Colin Trevorrow, who was fired. You get Tony Gilroy, who, you know, wrote, you know, what is it called? And you go to write the films.
Andor and Rogue One, you know. Yeah, look, I think that could be a good one. I think it would help sort out some of the issues that were plaguing that whole thing of coming up with a trilogy and not really having it nutted out yet. So that could be like chasing down the outline that never was. I like that idea. Always like with Colin Trevorrow, I always think of, I think it was Paul Scheer who pointed out that if you typed his name into Google and looked at his pictures on the red carpet, he kind of just has the same expression, which is a kind of sort of no expression. So I think that would be great for a suspect. He would just, like, not give anything away. Yeah.
Well, the other element is that Rian Johnson's partner, speaking of Paul Scheer, podcaster, Rian Johnson's partner, Karina Longworth, is a great podcaster and historian and critic that looks at the golden age of Hollywood. Now, I know that See How They Run kind of did that as well. By the way, Richard Attenborough is a character in those films. So
yes.
They already got a director who could have been a suspect. But maybe you could do a collaboration or at least take some inspiration there and put Benoit Blanc, like, almost like Blackadder. Like, what was Benoit Blanc like if he was in the 1950s?
Ah, I see. That, or, you know, I think there's been a few occasions where someone, like, he'll hit his head.
Oh, yes.
and kind of, like... You know, sort of wake up and he's in the 1930s or something like that. Or we'll get to maybe we'll, you know, Rian Johnson. He's worked you know, extensively in science fiction. Let's take a turn. Let's, you know, he meets an inventor as a time machine, and then we go from there. So look,
we don't want Joseph Gordon-Levitt playing the young Benoit Blanc. I just want to put that out there in the universe. I don't want to see it.
I can see it in my mind just with the contact lenses he'd use to get Daniel Craig's. Yeah. So. But there you go. Speaking of Joseph Gordon-Levitt, he is an actor that you know, Rian Johnson worked with on his debut Brick, which is a film that I hadn't seen for a long time, but I revisited it recently, and I was quite taken. I always liked it, but watching it again, it's really good. And particularly an actor who, over time, maybe unfairly, I've kind of been a bit sour on or just, like, not enjoyed some of his films in recent years. But going back to that and just seeing him as a younger actor, I was like, this is great. What a director. He was kind of formed from the jump and maybe has only gotten more kind of mature and balanced since Rian Johnson. So, yeah, but it's fun to imagine what could be with the next Knives Out Mysteries. And, yeah, if you have any ideas, listeners, you can always email the studio. Let us know via the Facebook group. And, yeah, who would be... I mean, that just sounds like a fun, you know, holiday dinner party activity. Like, come up with your own Knives Out cast list, you know?
Better than enacting a Knives Out murder mystery over the Christmas break. Tristan, thank you so much. We'll be back next week with some more new release reviews, but then it's right into our fabled top 10 the week after. We're shutting the door on new movies and we're going to make our assessment. We don't usually do a worst of list, but would the menu be right down there for you?
Yeah, that's an interesting because it's more, I don't, like, the movie is like fine on like a technical and performance level. I just think my experience of it, I was just like not enjoying at all. So it would be definitely for me one of the worst experiences, or one that would rank very low, even though in the end I can completely understand if people like and enjoy the film. It's not like, you know, outrageously like terrible or anything like that. It's just, I think sometimes it's like the tone of a thing. When you can sense that the filmmakers think they're being very clever and you just think like, this is this is pretty basic. Like, that is just like always going to be a sticking point. Is there anything, I know that your viewing is sometimes more limited than mine this year, Simon, but is there anything in terms of, you know, being very selective about your time? Has there anything come to light this year that was pretty egregious?
There were still a few movies that I found particularly grating, or they just didn't work. Even if they did hit those technical, you know, I was probably fortunate this year, as you say, I was able to be, or I had to be, a bit more selective in what I was going to go watch. So the films that I ended up not liking were ones that I was, like, disappointed by. Like, I didn't see any clunkers that are like, oh, God, I don't want to watch this. But I think of a film like On the Count of Three that I maybe high expectations for. I've got to go back through the whole list of what I saw this year because, admittedly, everything prior to, like, August 31st is sort of a faint blur. so I'll need to review the archives. So maybe we'll give a little brief, you know, dishonorable mention in our top tens. But otherwise, I think it's been an okay to good year for movies, and there are still a couple of masterpieces in there, which we'll no doubt give a give a doff of the cap to when we do our top tens in a couple of weeks.
Looking forward to it. And as always, you can let us know what's been your favourite films of 2022, either by texting us during the show or emailing Taylor while we're broadcasting. Or you can always message us on the Movie Squad Facebook page. But thank you again, Simon. And thank you to everyone who's been listening. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks.